Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight.
Well, welcome to part two of Taking a Walk with the one, the only...
Matt Siegel.
Charles Laquadera. It's so great to be with you. We're in Concord, Massachusetts. A great spot for a walk, beautiful day. We had a nice lunch. So, do you remember...
And Buzz bought.
I bought, which I love buying. You bought for me so many times. So, do you remember the first time that you interviewed for a radio job? And where was that?
I never interviewed for a radio job.
Never?
No, I don't think so.
Like when you got your first job, you didn't have to interview?
No, from what I remember, you're talking... You know, like I'm 54 years old, give or take four decades.
Yeah.
So I don't remember going back that far. But I do remember that I was working for my buddy owned a theater, a small community theater in Hollywood. And he was he had a part-time job as a disc jockey at KPPC in Pasadena, California. And this was, we were in Hollywood. And he said, "Hey, Charles, do you want to come into the station with me?" And I was doing some work with, I was writing a play at the time. And I said, "Oh, no, Dave, I'm really," he said, "Come on, take a break, come on with me." So I went into the station with him. He was playing jazz. And so, I was watching him, and he had me sit in at the console with him and do that stuff. And he said, "By the way," he said, they're looking for somebody to do a classical music piece called the Sunday Night Opera of the Year. Do you know anything about opera?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I like classical music." I said, "I don't know, you know, that much about it." But he said, "Anyway, you know, should just brush up on your opera, and I'll tell them I've got somebody to do the thing." So I just went in and one night, and the engineer showed me how to work the pots, I think they call them, the sliders, whatever those were. And then I got a write-up in the Pasadena Star News by their music critic. He said something like, I still have a copy of it, something like, "You know, in this world of classical music, when the announcers are so proper and so... Along comes an aspiring actor named Charles Laquadera, who talks like somebody you'd know on the street. Somebody who, finally, we have an ordinary human being, you know, one of us." Anyway, he gave me a great write-up, and so there was that. And then the station I was working at changed from classical to rock and roll. That was when the underground stations took over all the classical stations.
Yep.
Like up in San Francisco, in L.A., in Boston. Boston was, WBCN was a classical music station. And then all of a sudden, they couldn't make any money doing that, so they switched to rock and roll. And that's, so here I was now, the station that I was working for was a classical station, changed to a rock and roll station, and they kept me on because it was, you know, I was cheap labor. I was $2 an hour. So I would, and I didn't know that much about rock and roll. I didn't know that much about classical music. I was trying to be an actor. So I just mixed it up together, you know, mixed up. I'd play Rachmaninoff and just, you know, follow that with the Beatles or something like that. And then anyway, when I came from California, I came back here to my home in Milford to take a few weeks break. And I heard this station called WBCN. I called him up and I said, "Hey, you guys are great. What's going on?" And he said, "Oh, well, you know," and he asked me who I was, and I said, "Charles Lockwood." "Oh, you're the crazy bastard that plays rock and roll and classical music." He said, "Come on into the station." And BCN was looking for somebody because Peter Wolf was their, I guess, mid-morning DJ or night DJ, and he was leaving, and they needed somebody to replace him. So I lucked out, and I got a job. But anyway, that's not what you asked me. I forget what you asked
me. Well, I asked you the first interview, what you said, but then you said where it led to BCN. Now, when you called up to get the job at BCN, was that, who did you speak to? Was that Ray?
The first guy that I talked to was Jim Perry. He was the guy on the phone. And then when I went into the station, Sam Copper hired me.
Uh-huh.
He was Sam Copper was the program director, and he said, "Yeah, Peter Wolf is leaving to form some band, the Jay Giles band or whatever." And we could be looking for a night guy. So I worked late night guy, and that was amazing. I worked the 10 at night to 2 in the morning shift, and it was such a, it was so weird. Kate Curran Rooney, who's I'm staying with in Boston right now, she and her husband, she at the time was a listener line. She was the head of the listener line, 536-8000. Anyone who remembers the early days of BCN knows that number by heart. Leo 8000. Anyway, she came in and said, "There's three guys downstairs want to come up. They want to come up and play." And this was about midnight. I said, "Yeah," because my shift wasn't over for 2 hours. So they came up, and it was Jerry Garcia, it was Dwayne Allman, and I think Mickey Hart, somebody else from the Dead. But did I say Dwayne Allman?
You said Dwayne, yep.
Yeah, Dwayne Allman.
Yep.
And
Jerry
Garcia. Yep. And then another guy from either Mickey Hart, I forget.
Did they just come and hang out?
One of them had a guitar. And the other one... No, just one had a guitar, and they went back and forth, handed the guitar. But they didn't. They just came up to hang and smoke pot.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, eventually we got around to playing.
And you didn't realize how freaking cool it was.
We did. We were sort of all together. You know, we were DJs. We liked the music. They were musicians. They liked the radio. And, you know, we just sort of... We didn't think of it in terms like I didn't. When Dwayne Allman came up, I didn't go, "Oh my God, it's Dwayne Allman!"
Right.
I said, "Hey, dude.
Yeah.
What's happening?"
And it was just hanging out.
Yeah. How you doing? Yeah. It wasn't "Hey, dude." Back then, it was "Hey, man."
Hey, man.
Hey, man. How you doing? Yeah.
But you also, you had that nighttime, soothing, DJ voice.
Yeah. I remember. I had seen The Exorcist. Okay. And
where's this going? Uh-oh.
And I said, after I saw the movie The Exorcist, I lived alone in Cambridge. And I thought, I am never, ever going to go to bed alone. I am never. So I would go on the radio and just ask people if I could come sleep at your house. So many times I ended up on the floor next to some bed and next to a kitty litter box. It was like, you know. But anyway, one time this girl called and we talked for, oh my God, from 10, my shift started at 10. We talked from like maybe 11:30 until 2 o'clock. And at first we were going back and forth. You know how you do in phones when you're sort of trying to, you know, find the icebreaker line and stuff like that. And one of the things, she asked me, she says, "What do you look for in a woman?" And I said, "You want to hear the truth or you want to hear what I know you want to hear?" She said, "Tell me what I want to hear what you think I want to hear." And I said, "What do I look for in a woman? I look for somebody who's intelligent and somebody who's likes poetry, somebody who can watch the sunsets with, and somebody who, you know, likes to share ideas and thoughts." And she goes, "Well, okay, so what do you really look for in a woman?" I said, this is before Me Too. And this is a long time ago. So I don't think I want to finish.
You want to stop that?
I'm going to stop it right there. But anyway, so finally we agreed to meet, okay? So I drive, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I drive down to her place. By the time I get out of there, it's almost like morning's come. It's 4 o'clock or whatever, and she lives in Watertown. And I drive up to her house, and I just sit there. And at the time, I was smoking cigarettes. And so I'm sitting there waiting for her to come out, and I'm sitting there with the cigarette, and I'm blowing smoke rings. I'm being so cool. You have to picture it. You know, I'm just like sitting back there, blowing smoke rings with my cigarette, sitting behind the wheel of the car, waiting for this beautiful woman to come out, because she said she was a 10. And And all of a sudden, this woman comes out, and I'm not looking because I just want to be surprised. How wonderful! And the car door opens, and then the car door shuts, and boom, boom, boom! I start shaking in the seat. The seat's going up and down. So, needless to say, she was healthy. You know, very healthy.
Healthy.
Healthy. Yeah.
Good way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like she was a ton of beauty, and it was like she. And when I looked over with after I held my cigarette, I threw my cigarette out the window. I looked over to her, and she had painted her face green.
Oh my!
And she says, "My dad's pissed off at me because I just left the house." She says, "So get me out of here. This will teach you to go for looks, something like that." God. Anyway, whatever it was.
Did you stay off the request lines after that? Or?
Yeah, I decided it wasn't worth it. You know, The Exorcist still haunts me today.
To this day.
Yeah.
Anyway, right.
It's funny because I used to have movie nights in Hawaii where once a week we'd do a different movie that, you know, that we would all pick out. And so one week, I had 20 people coming into the house. And in my condo in Hawaii, and it was like one night I sent out the invites and I said, "Hey, we're going to go back a little bit and we're going to have some fun because it's Halloween. We're going to show The Exorcist." And every one of the 20 people, not one person said they would come. They all said, "Nah, I can't make that. No, that was the scariest movie in my life." No one would come.
Wow.
And that's years later, and still this, I think it's considered the scariest movie of all time.
Yeah, I wouldn't have come, I don't think.
Did you ever see it?
I did, and I never saw it again after that.
Yeah.
I had nightmares.
Dude, were you Catholic? Were you brought up Catholic?
I was, yeah. And so I was practicing, if you will, at that point, my Catholic thing, which I didn't quite realize what I was doing. But I think I righted that ship.
Yeah.
Are you practicing any religions these days?
No.
No.
No. But I
that's another topic you can't win with.
When our kids were born, we had to decide whether we wanted to bring them up Catholic. And I thought, hey, Jews, they don't have a hell. And then we decided, oh, we'll just bring them up to be good people.
Yeah, there you
that's
go.
What we did. Yeah.
So you interviewed George Harrison at one point, didn't you?
That was my first interview ever. I was so nervous in that.
That was a formal interview, right? Like, yeah. You formally, like...
Yeah, we had the tape recorder running. He actually... It's too bad. We have a little... that interview is somewhere out there on the internet.
Yeah.
At least part of it. And you could tell I was so... Sort of, that was my first interview ever.
Wow.
On that radio station that I had just started at.
What was he promoting?
It was a White Album that had come out.
Oh, my God.
And the way it happened, the only reason they let me do it was because we had gone to a Columbia or Apple, something, whatever record company it was, promotion party. And while we're there, I'm standing next to George Harrison at the, he had a lot of dandruff, by the way, on the back of his blue blazer. So anyway, I'm standing next to him at the table, you know, the what do you call those? We just all...
Like the buffet?
Yeah, buffet table. And I said to him, "George," I said, I'm with this really, an underground radio station. I said, you know, and all these other radio stations are there, for, you know, KHJ and all these radio stations are there. I said, would you give us an interview? And he said, sure. And so we set it up. And so
wow.
We went downstairs and he talked about each song on the White Album, and we lost the tape eventually. We didn't have, that tape is gone, but we did have a little bit of tape of what, he asked me what underground radio was, and then he compared to the pirate radio, the pirate ships that they have out there.
Yep.
Yeah, so we had a great conversation, but I was too nervous.
Could you detect that, from that conversation, that, you know, the Beatles as a group were winding down?
No.
No, not at all.
No. Was that happening by the White House?
I think it was starting to, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Did you watch the documentary, the one with...
I didn't like it. I saw part of it. I didn't like it.
What didn't you like about it?
I don't know. I just didn't like it.
Just couldn't get interested in it?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people said part one they couldn't get into, and then...
I think that's where I stopped.
And then they got into when they went up on the roof and played and all of that. But
I mean, I like the Beatles. As far as I'm concerned, their production was the best ever in the world. It was, I mean, Sgt. Pepper was such a game changer. But then, you know, after a while, it's like, that was a long time ago. Was that in 67, 65?
At least.
Know. Yeah.
If there was somebody that you could conjure up that you always wanted to interview, who would it be?
You mean whether they're dead or not?
Yeah. Or someone living now.
I mean, this is a stupid answer, but it's the truth. Sarah Vaughan, when I was growing up, had a, before rock and roll even came out, this was probably in the early 50s, she had a song called Time that you've never heard of, even though you've been in the music business for 50 years. She, and I knew all the words to it, it went something like, Time, all through the day, hours and hours. Anyway, you can find it, I'm sure, on YouTube. And it was a 78, and I love that song so much, and I remember that was one of the first jazz records that I had ever heard. And I always was hoping someday, because if Sarah Vaughan were sitting at a table at a restaurant and you and I were there, I'd walk over to her and I would stand up and she'd look up at me and I'd say, Time. She'd say, you know that song? Do you know that song? I love that song. She would go crazy.
Right.
It didn't become a hit.
Right.
But anyway.
Why did someone by the name of Big Mama Thornton not like your whistling?
She was superstitious about that. She was like, well, she was great. I mean, she came in and she was like, oh, this should have been on the Get Off My Lawn segment, because she
right.
She would say, that boy, Elvis, he stole my song. He stole Hound Dog. That was my song. And she complained about so many different things, but it was funny. And we really got along. She loved me. She'd like to just, you know, yell at me. Don't you whistle, boy? Don't you go making bad luck coming down that hallway? I mean, I can't, you know, her voice was a lot stronger than that.
But that place, BCN, during, in particular that era, but all the eras really, was filled with the colorful characters that worked there, but people who would come in that were celebrities as well. It was like this...
Yeah, we didn't think of it as being celebrities.
It was like a haven of stories, right?
Yeah. BCN was sort of divided up into different eras, too. Like you said, there was one era where it started out with the people who started BCN. Joe Rogers, Tommy Hadges, Steven Seagal, Jim Perry. All those people were the BCN that most people now who think of BCN don't know.
Right.
Because BCN became very popular in later years when Norm Weiner, Oedipus, Tony Berardini, those guys took over. You could either have great radio or good ratings, but you can't have both. And you probably know that as a station manager, a program director, and a consultant, that if you're gonna have great radio, that means you're gonna be able to play John Lee Hooker in Canned Heat, the 20-minute version. You're gonna be able to play classical music and mix it with Take Five and mix that with Billie Holiday. You're gonna have great radio, but you're not gonna have great ratings. And people going to work, as you know, they want to hear a familiar song. They don't want to hear a 12-minute John Lee Hooker song that goes on and on and on. They want to hear the Eagles. They want to hear songs they know.
So what was your secret sauce? What made you so special?
Because it's Boston. Everybody in Boston, everybody everywhere, once they like the idea that the guy on the radio is a total fuck up. They say, hey, if he can be on that, I can do that. I think a lot of people...
You think it was the everyman approach?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. The point is I wasn't as classy. I mean, I wasn't a Robert J. Lertzema. Any classical music listener would know who that is. You know, I wasn't Mark Parento. was great because he went from top 40 radio, we could call it, or at least, you know, going over to FM underground radio. He had a great voice. I didn't have that. And he did great interviews. I don't do that. I don't do great interviews. And I just go up there and I just sort of screw up. I mean, but people love to hear that. I made a whole alter ego about that. And he was even more popular than I was, called Dwayne Glasscock.
That's right. Where is he now?
Dwayne and I are not on speaking terms.
Poor Dwayne. So you had that stunt involving Arbitron.
That was Dwayne. That
okay,
was not
excuse me.
Me.
Dwayne did.
Yeah.
And that was as a result of, I think, correct me.
No, I'll correct you already.
I haven't even said anything.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say it was a result of the ratings.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. The ratings were great.
Okay.
But Dwayne Glasscock went on the air and he said, we didn't have anything to do that day, so that was that's where Dwayne decided to go. And he said, you know, there's all these rich guys, these fat rich guys are smoking cigars and in Cadillacs driving all around down in Beltsville, Maryland, and it's that they have this company called Arbitron, A-R-B, and they just go around and they tell radio. These guys decide, they make decisions about what radios, what people, how many people are listening, and they have this stupid technical way of deciding. And they said, you know, they said that our radio station, that our disc jockeys only got a 4, and that I only got a 13. And I said, and I looking out the window, because we're at the top of the Prudential, looking out the window, there's 13 people out there right now, and the phones are all lit up. So these guys are lying, and here's what I want you to do. Everybody, you get a bag of crap of feces and put it in a plastic bag so that the mailman won't get it on his fingers, and you mail it to Arbitron Research Bureau, box 147 in Beltsville, Maryland, 872513. And he just kept going every break, every single time, using music, you know, play like Stevie Nicks or Sit on My Face Stevie Nicks, whatever he played. And then at the end of the song, he'd say, don't forget, you gotta send a bag of, and we bleep it out and say, bag of shit, you know, to Beltsville, Maryland at this address. I kept doing it. So now comes, that was on a Saturday. So now comes Monday morning. And this manager of the station at the time, his name was Clee Dobra. And so Clee goes in my studio when I'm doing a show, the morning show. And he says, Charles, can I see you after your show? And I said, yeah. So I go to his office after my show.
Never a good sign.
Right. You don't go to the boss's, the manager's office. So anyway, I expect, I don't know what it's going to be about. I didn't realize. Anyway, he said, and he's got this big cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and he's stirring it with his finger, and it's like he's steaming hot. And the veins on his neck, he was a really white guy, the veins on his neck were protruding. And he says, you know, Charles Lacordaire is a professional, competent, great radio announcer. And Charles is well-respected, and he does a wonderful show. But Dwayne Glasscock is a fucking idiot, and Dwayne Glasscock is not going to work on this fucking station, not on my station anymore. Do you understand? Dwayne is fired. And I said, Clee, Dwayne had ratings of a 13. That's unheard of in Boston. Like a 4 is great. He had a 13 every Saturday. And he looks at me and he goes, are you playing with a full deck of cards? You're acting like Dwayne is somebody else. And I said, you just fucking fired Dwayne. And you kept me. So anyway.
Well, I know one of the happiest moments is when somehow you, maybe I helped with this, maybe somebody else helped with this.
Watch it.
You were able to validate from someone inside Arbitron then that a lot of people sent those bags of
manure. Well, put it this way, Duane had a 13. Unheard of ratings. No one's ever, I don't think, you can ask Carter Allen, but I don't think anyone's ever got a 13 in ratings in radio in Boston. But maybe Howie Carr, your sound alike. No. So if a guy with a 13 is telling people every break to send a bag of shit to Arbitron, they're getting a lot of bags of shit.
You were very happy when you heard that it actually, that there was a lot there.
No, I was, I mean, I knew it was going to happen. I mean, Duane knew.
Duane knew.
Yeah. But here's the thing about Arbitron. The next rating period, the BCN's ratings were still good. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they all said, I mean, I'm sure they, you know, they just, after the first bag of shit, they probably said, okay, something's going on. There's some terrorists out there. So they probably didn't even know what it was about. Once you get one bag of that stuff, and then
one's
see,
enough.
Well, if you see another one coming, you know there's something going on here, and so you just tell the post office, hey, no more of that. So, but I don't know if they knew and they just didn't care or whatever. But there was no lawyers, there was no litigation, nothing.
Well, lawyers did get a hold of the radio business at one point in time, and I think at times it's fair to say they really took a lot of the fun out of it, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing their job,
yeah.
But they really did take the fun out of the business. We're walking here in the center of Concord. I just want to point out, we're going by the Concord Bookshop, and this is one of the great local bookstores that we don't have enough of these days. Mm-hmm. So I just know you being a voracious reader of books.
Oh, yeah, I love books. I read a book a day.
What are you reading?
Right now, I'm reading Catcher in the Rye. Oh, wait, that was the last book I read. That was 40 years ago.
Going that far back. Yeah.
Well, but I do read a lot of magazines, and I read a lot of emails.
So yeah. Let's get to the ZRX days.
Okay.
You want to?
Yeah.
Yeah. You seem like you were hesitant.
Well,
It was fun.
We're doing a lot of walking here.
It was fun.
I mean, if we could sit down.
Yeah, we'll sit down.
Yeah. Okay, so then do you have to change the name of the show?
No, we could saunter or taking a set.
Everybody, what's the show called? Walk with Buzz?
Taking a walk.
Yeah, taking a walk. This was called taking a sit.
Taking a sit. Actually, I was eyeing that chair back there.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. What about that one? The bench?
Yeah,
Main Street Market and Cafe?
We'll find some way to take that over. As long as we can cross the street. So coming to ZLX was a bit of a culture shock. Yes?
For them.
And you too.
No?
For them, yes. I would be considered part of the them.
Yeah, but you sort of knew it was coming.
I did.
Other people didn't.
Right. But it was, you had gone from a place, we can go up there.
Perfect.
You had gone from a place where there were very few rules, and then you came to a place that had a lot of rules. So that was a big change, right?
Yep. Yeah, at BCN, you know, the girls that worked in the office, they'd go, hey, Charles, how you doing? Are you having a good day? You just glad to see me? You know, they make all kinds of sexual things and... you know, the guys did too. We did too. When I went over to ZLX, it was like the person that was doing the news or public affairs, whatever it was, very pretty woman. I said, hey, can we go hang in the manager's office for a half hour or so? And she said, no, I don't think so. It was whatever. I thought it was funny. At the time, it wasn't like that. It was more lighthearted. It was more funny. But right now, it sounds like I'm one of those predators. And it wasn't. It was just kind of just going back and forth with a little kind of like innuendo and whatever. So the next thing I know, about 3 days later, you're calling me into the office, into the manager's office. And
We won't mention him by name.
Yeah,
we'll say he who we shall not name.
Right.
Okay.
And there's this guy there that I never saw in my life, and they asked me to sit down. And this guy says to me, he gets introduced to me as a lawyer from New York, a high-powered lawyer. And he says to me, I'm just paraphrasing now, something like, you harassed or, you know, something like that. One of our female employees, and just know that it doesn't matter how high your ratings are, it doesn't matter how much money you're making, if you do that again, you'll be terminated. And I'm sitting there, and there was my culture shock. It's me finding out, oh, this ain't WBCN.
Yeah.
It's not the same. Yeah, so that was kind of, but that, in a way, that turned out to be a good thing because she eventually came to visit me in Hawaii. But the point is that I learned, you know, something. Like, it was a learning process, and I think a lot of guys right now who don't get it are feeling the pain of what it means not to get it in a culture that now is much more respectful. You know, I remember we had a sign for the kids that said, no is a complete sentence. It was for the kids when they were teenagers. Now, it's a sign that every guy should understand the word no. It's not like she really does want to, she's just being polite. It's like no means no. You know, so anyway, you learn that over the years, you know. But right now, I'm too old to be any kind of a threat anyway.
But one of the things that I'm most proud that I was part of, and I think you, I hope, are proud of, is you left number one in the entire market. You... When you had finally quit
when you're ahead,
at that point, and I think I made a promise to you. I said, Charles, you will be number one when you leave.
Yep.
And lo and behold, you were, and that was
number one, but not in all demos,
I think you were at that point.
Not Howard Stern.
You beat Howard when you left, and that was early in Howard's, you know, ultimate morning, you know, reign, if you will. So he had not, you know, he had been, as you remember, he was nights at BCN, and
he was nights at BCN,
and that's
and I was mornings, and he used to always say, when is Lacordaire gonna die? But he's a nice guy, actually. He's, that whole radio thing he does is just baloney. He's just really a super guy. I mean, I don't know him, but I've talked to him a few times, and
well, he speaks highly of you because he went to school up here, right?
Oh, well, see, here's this other thing that's really funny. Apparently, I'm in the Boston or New England Hall of Fame, one of those halls of fame, and I'm in that. And every couple of years, somebody decides to bring me up as a nominee for
the radio. I have.
So the radio hall of fame, Tom Couch. Yeah. Anyway, this happens like every few years.
Yeah.
So every few years that happens, and I think, boy, that would be really cool, you know, and. But each time, because of whatever the process is, I haven't gotten in. I haven't got enough votes to get in. So I made clear, not to you, but to the, and I'm making it clear to you now, that the last two guys that I talked to that had set it up and said they were going to nominate me, I forget, was there a guy named Gleason? Or anyway.
Is Craig Kitchen is one of the
Kitchen,
guys.
Yeah. So I said to those guys, I said, look it, you can nominate me this time, but... here's one thing you got to promise me, because I'll come back and haunt you. If it takes till after I die for you guys to put me in the Hall of Fame, I said, I want you to know that I refuse to accept the award. I'm not trying to sound like Marlon Brando, but I want that thing when I'm alive so I can enjoy it. Don't do that bullshit like you did with Lynn Zockin and make a bridge after me after I'm dead. Do it while I'm alive. So remember, Buzz, if I happen to die before you, okay, then you better not nominate me for that thing, because I will turn it down post-mortem, or whatever the expression is. All right, I got to go.
I promise. Let's take a walk back to the car.
Okay.
I got to thank you for taking a walk, but I got to thank you for a couple of particular things, and I just want to acknowledge it. First of all, I go to the Consumer Electronics Show out in Vegas. I try to go every year to take in the show and the new innovations and gadgets. And there's a few people who have motivated me to go You're one of them because you were so early on being intrigued by new devices. You couldn't work them, by the way.
Right, but exactly.
You were intrigued. Yeah. So your curiosity inspired me. And your passion for creating things as well. You don't really think about it that way, but I look at you as you had left radio and you just kept, you know, being out there. Some of it was lifestyle, some of it was probably politics, but you were out creating things, and I so admire that, and I thank you for inspiring me with that as well. And then the last thing, I'll never forget this, sitting in the office at ZLX, and I remember, I think you came in and wanted to talk to me about something. And I probably, I don't know, rolled my eyes or whatever. And you shut the door and you said, I just want you to know, you should take this as a compliment that we want to come in and talk to you, because in so many cases, that would never be something we'd want to maybe do with the person in your position. So you sort of...
Because you were easy to talk to always as a boss.
You always level
set. You were more of a boss friend.
Yeah. You level set me on that thing as well. So I'm eternally grateful. I'm grateful for taking a walk, and I'm grateful for our friendship.
And you'll always be my boss, Buzz, and my friend. Thank you so much.
Good help.
We're shaking hands now, by
That's
the way.
That's right.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.